police-related headlines, phone calls, heated debates, topics that matter to you. Matter to you. Nothing is off limits. The only show hosted by police for society. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Policing Black and White. And now your host, TJ Block. TJ Block.
And Tits McGee.
Here we go. We got three people in studio right now. Travis can stay just for a little bit. He's got to go. He's got a real life to do and real money to earn.
What does that say for you and I?
Absolutely nothing. So we're going to go over some dirty cops. We're going to go over the Starbucks incident, which is hitting national news. And we're going to go over some DWI stuff. We answered a question last time. And then the person actually wrote me back who asked the question and wanted to just elaborate a little bit, so we're going to go into that too. But the Starbucks thing, I think, is very interesting. I know Travis wants to weigh in on it.
Basically, the guys came in, asked if they could use the restroom, which I think was a dead giveaway. They weren't going to buy anything. Yes, they're two black guys, and the manager said, you know, it's their policy that if they're not going to buy anything, then they can't just sit around. They said they were waiting for a friend. So they were denied the bathroom. Then they were asked to leave. They refused. They said they were just waiting for a friend. Eventually, this guy shows up. But it's, you know, after the fact, because after refusing to leave, manager basically said she was going to call the police. The guys called her bluff, told her to go ahead and call the police. They weren't leaving. Cops show up. Apparently, these were, they look like bike officers, bicycle officers. So this may be located in a downtown area. I'm not sure. But officers show up, talk to them for quite a bit. And even in the video, which just started after the fact, it's not started once the officers arrive or prior to. These cops sit there and talk to them, and you can hear them in the video asking them to leave, telling them it's the final, you know, this is your final chance to just leave. You're going to be charged with trespassing. And eventually, after an additional bike cop shows up, it looks like two supervisors, they're forced to arrest these guys and escort them out of the Starbucks.
It looked to me like the cop was, like, begging them. Just please leave.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know why they had probably at least two supervisors, wouldn't you say, Travis?
Yeah, I would say one looked like the supervisors for the actual bike unit, and the other looked like the supervisor probably for the district.
Right. The reason they did this is because they knew this was going to go down as a shit sandwich. But, yeah, it's like I was talking to my wife after we saw the video. I think it was Sunday morning when we were having coffee. I told her, yeah, I personally have stopped at like a McDonald's or something when I'm on the road, have to run in and take a quick piss. And I literally do run in and I'm quickly out of there because I know they reserved the right to tell me if you're not a paying customer, you can't use the facilities, to include sitting in booths or whatever like Starbucks has, you know, tables and all that. It's a no brainer.
Well, you bring up a good point. Didn't one of you were saying that, they actually kicked out an officer at one point, didn't they?
Yeah, Travis.
According to their police commissioner, he cited an incident where it wasn't really an incident. He was just stating that a police sergeant came in one time and asked to use the restroom at that particular Starbucks, and they refused. They said, no, it's only for paying customers. Even if you're wearing a badge, it doesn't matter. So he was saying at least their policy is consistent. It's not. He's trying to point out that, you know, it's not simply because these guys were black. But they're quickly turning this into a police thing. You know, the media is trying to vilify the police in this instance, but Starbucks policy, it's, you know, it's privately owned. They can kick out anybody they want to for any reason. If you come in with a shirt they don't like, they can tell you to leave, and you can't do anything about it. You can complain. You can try to run a smear campaign against them, but in the end, that's it. If they tell you to leave, you've got to leave or you're trespassing. That's why the cops were called, and the cops' hands were tied. Once the guys refused to leave after being asked to do so several times, very politely, because the cops knew they were being videoed, and I don't think that would have mattered, but they knew they were being videoed, and that's why Jeff said, you know, the supervisors were called, because they knew this was going to turn into something, or had potential to turn into some type of incident that was bigger than what it was, for sure.
Well, and the reason, too, places like this, especially restaurants, was my experience as a cop, is because not that these guys were homeless. They were well-dressed, well-groomed, but if a lot of places have to do this because you can have homeless people setting up camp in there, you know, washing their socks and underwear in the sink in the bathroom. And the other thing is, too, these guys were told several times, yeah, you must leave or you're going to be arrested. They got exactly what they wanted.
Well, what does it go back to, Jeff? All of us in here say, if you listen, you will not get in trouble.
Oh, yeah, but my point is, and Travis, didn't you say you saw their meeting with the CEO of Starbucks?
Oh, Starbucks is going to fold. I'm afraid that the manager who called the police is probably going to lose their job. I think it's a woman. She's going to lose her job. They're going to throw her to the fire, and she'll be the scapegoat for this whole thing. Now, Starbucks will probably pay these guys. They'll issue a public apology. They'll change their policy and procedures internally, and they'll probably have internal training. Some of that may need to happen.
Is Starbucks that stupid, though? Because if they fire somebody following procedure...
It's all about politics, man.
Of course. Yeah, but I would love to see what this manager could come back at Starbucks if she were fired.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They're opening up Pandora's box.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And the guys were released right away because Starbucks said that they didn't want to prosecute.
Ugh.
They just wanted them out of there.
Which makes the officers look terrible.
You know, and everybody in... You can hear in the video the people in the background, well, I was here the whole time. They didn't do anything. You know, I was here. They didn't do a thing. They just sat there. Well, that was the problem. They were sitting there after being told to leave by management and by police and being told what would happen if they didn't. That's illegal. You can't. I understand what some people are trying to make this into, but this isn't, you know, this isn't the sit-ins. You know, they weren't there protesting and making a statement. They wanted to use the bathroom and wait for somebody, and they asked them to leave because those seats are reserved for people who are buying things. Even if that means it's people buying the cheapest coffee on the menu and sitting there and using their Wi-Fi for 2 hours, because that's what they cite as examples of other people do this and nobody gets, you know, told to leave because they're not, you know, black. Because they're trying to make this into a race thing because, well, you race bait and make it into a racial situation, and that sells more newspapers and, you know, advertisements than anything else.
Well, and another thing is Starbucks is prime real estate for a lot of people. A lot of people go to Starbucks, especially on weekends, you know, like clockwork. And sometimes, yeah, I used to hang out at Starbucks on duty sometimes after I bought my cup of coffee. They want to keep people moving as much as they can so they can get more customers in. And a lot of customers go to Starbucks. If it's filled up like that, they'll just turn around and walk out because it's also a social event for a lot of people too. So this is absolutely a no-brainer.
I'm going to ask a loaded question, and of course it's my duty on the show to be the asshole. If it was a black manager who kicked these black guys out, do you think we'd be reading about it?
It wouldn't even have made any headline.
Isn't that sad?
Well, see, that's what pisses me off is that every headline I read is, you know, two black men that were arrested at Starbucks, you know, or both black men, two black men, you know, white officers, white manager. Why is this relevant?
Well, it's not. But like you said, it makes headlines and sells.
It's and Brad, you know, the guest we had in here that we couldn't air, brought up the point that all America reads is headlines. They won't read the article. Right. So right there, people think, oh, it's the cops that did bad. Had nothing, like Travis said, and I'm not going to reiterate the whole thing, but it makes cops look bad when their hands are tied. It's just, it's sad, man.
Well, the CEO has already issued an apology. The mayor, I think, has already issued an apology to these two guys. So there will be a settlement so that there's not a lawsuit. I guarantee it. And this sets yet another precedent that, for something like this to happen down the line. And it seems like all you got to do is call someone a racist and then suddenly you get paid.
Well, you know more about that than anybody, being on the good side. Kind of a teaser for next show.
Well, yeah. And I've been a victim of that, you know, and it's simply just the circumstance. I happen to be, you know, I was a white officer, and the person I was arresting happened to be, African-American. So suddenly, I must be racist. Had nothing to do with them breaking the law and me enforcing the law.
Right.
It just simply had to do with my internal hatred towards the other race. And that's total bullshit.
It's funny because I followed your, obviously, being a very close friend of yours and being with you since the beginning of your career. We're not going to get into it now because we don't have time. So we're going to get into it next show, the rest of Travis's story. But
it's going to be a good one.
It's going to be a good one.
Unbelievable bullshit.
Yeah, unbelievable.
It actually went down.
Yeah, and this is all true stories, unfortunately. But, it got away from this person that you were arresting, how many warrants he had, and how much of a, how much of a shitbird this guy was. But nobody looked at that. All anybody looked at was you, because you were white, this guy was black, people believed his lies.
Well, if the news says it, the news prints it,
or, it's real.
You know, it happened.
Right.
You know.
Right. and Travis brought up is that it about the Starbucks? I mean, there's so much more to it.
Well, it's developed. The story's, developing every day. There's a little bit more to it. The last thing I read is that the CEO of Starbucks has agreed to meet with the two gentlemen. And I don't even see why it's come to this, but, because now there is a small protest outside of that particular Starbucks. They want it shut down. So any day now, I imagine, Al Sharpton or one of those guys is going to try to attach himself to this thing.
Oh, of course. Where was I feel bad for not doing my research, and you may mention it. Where is this Starbucks? Do you guys know?
Philly.
Philadelphia. Oh, God. And that's a melting pot, just like, New York and a lot of other places. So, man, I'm surprised to hear that from Philly, because I got respect for that city.
Well, the thing is, what really gets me is this is, with everything that's going on in the world today, this story really shouldn't have been a story in itself. I mean, basically, it should have read like this. Two guys came into Starbucks, didn't want to buy anything. They were asked to leave because they were loitering. Refused. Cops came. They asked him to leave. Refused. Arrested. Done. Why? All the other details doesn't matter, because there's no underlying story. There's no conspiracy. There's no racial profiling and this and that that's really going on here. Now, other people want to cite that, well, this wouldn't have happened if they were white. This wouldn't have happened if they were white. Yeah, it would have. Or maybe it wouldn't have. I don't know.
Well, hell, one of the...
We can play what-if games all day long.
One of the police supervisors on station watching the whole thing and watching the officers arrest the two suspects was a black male himself.
Yeah.
So if he thought there was any unfair treatment to these guys, he would have put the kibosh on it right then and there, because he's the supervisor.
I'm going to tell you right now, the way we were trained, and Tim can attest to this, you ask someone, you tell someone,
you make someone. Yep.
And we've gotten away from that, because nowhere in training would we have been able to stand there and tell the guy who refused to get up and leave an establishment and to ask him to leave, more than twice.
10 times.
3 times, 4 times, 5 times. Because
we would have gotten our asses reamed.
If we had done a scenario where, we're sitting there and we're doing a hypothetical situation where we're asking someone to leave, you know, the other trainees are behind us, you know, watching this unfold. They're all talking to themselves going, man, I would have gotten this guy up by now.
All right, now playing devil's advocate, all right, they don't leave. And Travis, you and I or Jeff, we show up. We ask the three times. We use our rule. They don't. We forcefully make them leave. Imagine how that would look on the news. It was a no-win situation for the cops the second they walked in the door.
Yeah, I mean,
well, the cops have already changed the way they police. You can tell. If you're asking someone six or seven times to leave, then you're already behind now what you used to do.
Because, well, but another thing is, too, society needs to think about this. How many times have you been in a public establishment, a restaurant or whatever, and you see somebody's pretty drunk and out of hand? You know, that's why you have our retailers have this policy. You know, for that reason too. So they've got to have a blanket policy. You're not paying, you must go.
Well, yeah, I think it is a blanket policy because private property. You know, yes, it's a public business, but Starbucks still owns it. They can ask anybody to leave for any reason. It doesn't matter.
It's called we reserve the right.
Right. Perfect. We reserve the right. And if Starbucks asks them to go, that's it. Well, that's no questions asked.
It's going
to
be it's a Starbucks issue and not a police issue.
Right.
That's why the commissioner, who's a black man, came forward and said his officers did absolutely nothing wrong.
And who's still getting blamed?
Well, they're saying the police are on the defensive. Well, they're defending their actions because they were the right action.
Right.
And that's not just a...
Well, they're defending their actions because of the headlines.
It's not a cop saying it. It's just a rational human being saying it, too.
And I got to cover the show's ass. Yeah, okay. There are three cops in here, and I got to give the disclaimer. Yeah, a lot of times we take the cop side, but recently we've pointed out some cops that are shitbirds. In this instance, the cops were right. No doubt about it.
And they showed more than commendable restraint and patience. Yeah.
These guys were handcuffed, and while the one gentleman's being handcuffed, you can hear him cursing and mouthing off a little bit because he's upset he's being arrested.
But that's a charge in itself.
Well, the cops, again, they just did the minimal amount of force needed. They put them in handcuffs. They ushered them out. Apparently, they weren't going to prosecute. I guess they released them. They may have released them on site or took them downtown and released them.
From what I understood, they released them 10 hours later. Or let's put it this way. Charges were dropped 10 hours later, from what I understood.
It's ridiculous. It just shows the political culture, climate we're in right now. Not only...
I guarantee you, if those... If you want to turn it into a race thing, you got to look at it like this, though. It's like, do we... You know, don't judge a book by its cover. Well, we do. We have to sometimes.
Yeah.
If you show up for a job interview and you're dressed like you just left football practice, they're not probably going to hire you. Well, had these guys come in and been dressed in, say they were dressed business casual, do you think that they would have stood out as much? No, but they were in, you know, I think sweatpants and maybe a hoodie or something. Yeah. They drew attention to themselves by asking to use the bathroom, which customers don't typically do that. So then they kind of gave away that they weren't in there to buy anything and they were just hanging out on their phones. So then they were asked to leave.
Well, they said they were waiting for their friend.
They were waiting for a friend.
And he did show up at the end. But cops aren't mind readers.
Like, well, not but
the guys. But exactly.
How many times should we get lied to a day or got lied to a
but
day?
But even if it was true, Starbucks policy is if you're not a customer, then why are you there?
Well, this is just another clear example of officers being put into a bad situation because once it started filming, it became a shit sandwich. And the officers had no choice. They responded to a call. It's not like they were actively looking to take some type of self-initiated action. This was a call for service to where, okay, you're called into Starbucks as a cop. This is a situation. These are the laws you have to abide by. They had no choice. They had to make the arrest if these guys wouldn't leave. And again, going back to what we're saying, this is exactly what these guys wanted because now they're going to get paid by Starbucks probably.
Now, three cops sitting in here, what are the chances that the employees knew these guys already?
What does it matter?
Because I think reading the article that these guys have done it before, and they were just sick of it at this point.
The officers wouldn't have known any of this.
I'm not talking about the officers. All I'm talking about is Starbucks themselves.
I don't think they knew these guys in particular. Maybe they did, mm-hmm. but I think that possibly this has happened before. We don't know if it's an ongoing issue at that Starbucks that people come in just to use the Wi-Fi or just use the bathroom and sit around and get out of the cold and take up spots for other people.
Yeah, I misspoke. When I said these guys, I didn't mean those individuals. I meant people of, you know.
What do you mean, these people?
These people, no.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, you're not making any fucking sense.
No, what I'm saying is the people that come in and try to stay warm or need access to the Wi-Fi that don't have it, those kind of people I know firsthand utilize Starbucks to go on Wi-Fi, stay warm, and stuff like that.
Same issue at McDonald's.
Right.
You know, same issues. And I'll tell you, Jeff talked about, being on a road trip and stopping in to use the bathroom at a McDonald's or something. You don't overstay your welcome because you're not really technically welcome. You're not. It's a restroom for paying customers. It's not a public restroom for anybody.
Well, it's like I said.
So I feel bad. Like, I'll go in.
But you're hauling ass out of there.
And I haul out, yeah.
You're hauling ass to the bathroom after you eat McDonald's. Yeah, more like
well, if I was eating, I'm coming right back.
Yeah, but not like you. Most of us don't eat McDonald's, Tim. All right.
He skips
terrible,
Travis.
Terrible, before
Travis has to get out of here, didn't you bring up this dirty cop thing in Memphis?
Yeah. And one of the things I like to do is I'll skim articles and stuff and just look for anything police related, stuff that we can talk about. Again,
when you're not surfing porn.
My disclaimer is that I'm here simply to give my opinion. All right. I'm not giving expert testimony or anything like that. So I'm just a third guy to, talk shit and give my opinion on things. And if anyone knows me, they know I'm very opinionated and I don't have any problem saying what I feel. So this was an incident that happened in Memphis. Two cops, relatively new cops. One guy became a cop in 2015, one guy in 2012, basically were shaking down drug dealers in the town, taking money from them, taking drugs from them on traffic stops. Well, eventually, tips came in, I know, to the FBI Tarnished Blue Unit, is what they call themselves. So I guess that's a unit that's going after dirty cops. So they ended up taking the tip seriously and had an undercover cop go in. And sure enough, these two officers shook them down for money and stole money from them. And I believe did it on two different occasions. Well, then eventually, down the road, word comes in that a shipment of heroin's coming in, and these cops get back to the undercover police officer and offer to protect the shipment and make sure it arrives for $9,000. That's the police way, doing their duty. So I think they picked up $4,000 in an empty car that was left at Walmart, and then the remaining $5,000 was given to them at a shipping yard or something. And then shortly after that, the FBI arrested them. And to my knowledge, they've confessed. I imagine they're going to look for some type of plea deal.
Yeah.
To get a minimum sentence. But it's shit like that that makes all cops look bad. And like I've said it before, there are good cops, but they're shitty cops. Just like there's good doctors, good lawyers, shitty doctors, shitty lawyers, shitty teachers, good parents, bad parents. Every job you can imagine, there's someone good at it and there's someone bad at it. The profession doesn't change that.
Well, and the other thing is too, we've talked about this before, given how difficult it is to perform the job of a police officer nowadays, subpar people are applying. Because people that have a good education, maybe, or good ethics or something, that are marketable in other ways that may have considered law enforcement, aren't doing so now.
Absolutely.
And we're seeing that in our agency.
Absolutely. I said it when I left. I said the applicant pool, is, for one, it's shrinking altogether, but college graduates and college graduates are less likely now to apply for these positions. In my academy class, I was surprised by how many of us had gone to college, some of us very good colleges, and had made the choice to become a police officer, knowing that the pay sucked, knowing that you didn't get respect, knowing that it was a dangerous job, but it was something that everyone felt they had a calling for and that it was a very rewarding position to have.
Well, some of our academy mates even had masters.
Yeah, I think one guy may have had a master's.
Very educated.
So I just think that those, it's suddenly become a, it's just a bad business decision and a bad career decision to become a cop.
Well, and when you have people that are taking the job of a cop just so they have benefits, and yeah, you're not going to get rich being a cop unless you're dirty like these jackasses in Memphis, but I mean, you're not going to get rich as a cop, but you're going to be able to, you know, have a decent lifestyle, let's put it that way. But again, if you're only taking it for it's an, enough money to survive on and you get good benefits and there's retirement package, that's the only reason you're taking a job to be a cop. You're not gonna reasons. Yeah, you're not gonna be a good one.
You're not gonna be a good one, you're probably not gonna last.
No.
Or or you'll last so long they'll make you a fucking captain or something. That's the problem in this agency.
Well, I think in Memphis, Tennessee, a big part, I believe that it's one of the most criminally active cities in the nation. And I think, hell, it's just some cops get caught up in that, man. And when you see crime that high and cops aren't making a living, they're only human. They're going to try to find a way to support their family.
And no. Fortunately, no. Don't you dare go that down that path.
Oh, I will.
I will.
There is no fucking right reason. There is no good reason for a cop to come dirty.
That's not what I fucking said. Listen to my words.
I thought that's what he said.
No, I didn't say a good cop. I said in high crime areas, unfortunately, and I said that word, unfortunately, some cops get caught up in it. They know where the bad is. And a cop will get caught up in some bad shit, not know how to support his family, and get caught up in this, you know, hey, $9,000, that's easy. You know what? I'm surrounded by crime. It's my whole life. And I'm going to take the money and I'm going to take the chance. I'm not saying it's a good cop. Not saying any cop should do that. That's terrible cop.
But my point is, that's not a good enough reason to take the money.
I didn't say that.
Well, it sort of sounded like what you were saying.
No.
Okay.
But, not at all.
You're just stating basically that some cops will become dirty cops.
Right.
Well, shit.
Yeah, it's in their blood. But when you're in that high crime of an area and you're completely surrounded by it.
Well, I don't know if it's the...
It's not going to happen in Mulberry.
No, I think what you're trying to say is you become somewhat a...
Part of society.
Product of your environment.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Still not a good enough reason, but I sort of...
I never said it was a good fucking reason.
Listen, jackass, I'm saying I sort of see what you're getting at now. I'm not saying... At first, I thought you were trying to give some type of justification. What you're trying to say is, you know, cops are human too, and the bad ones could become a product of their environment, and that's why they can turn dirty. Is that fair enough to say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
That's not how it sounded like initially.
That's not true, because the first thing I said was cops are human, true. So you repeated exactly what I said. So,
well, one theme of this show, if I've noticed, is repetition. So,
and if you listen
we'll
to last,
keep on keeping on.
And if you listen to last show, who repeated who five times? So.
I didn't listen to
it.
He is getting better.
What people don't know is in the application process for police officers, they do a full financial check and a background check, obviously, but they check your finances, and there's a lot of questions and digging around there because they want to make sure that a cop doesn't, you know, some or a potential the recruit becomes a cop, you know, that he doesn't have a history of debt, and you know, basically they're trying to say that people who are financially strapped and have all this debt may be more tempted to stray and take cash you know, on the job.
Yeah, but they're lessening standards constantly. I bet what used to keep someone out of academy with their credit report 5 years ago, it's probably been less than some now.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, that's what I was getting at. In Memphis, right? Yeah. Crime's at an all-time high. So they're having trouble getting good cops. No question about it. I read that. So they're not taking the cream of the crop anymore. They're taking guys who, you know what? I bet you they're saying in their own mind, we're going to take a chance with this guy. And that should never come out of administration for department's
it
mouth.
It came out of our administration's mouth all the time.
We're not counting you.
Our administration said, word for word, this is beyond the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
I had a very high up captain tell me that off the record that the recruits coming in were just atrocious.
We had one.
This is recently, Travis?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We had one, Tim. I think you were on the squad. This guy was being bounced around all over the agency after he got out of field training because they wanted to keep remediating him. And this guy started doing some pretty outlandish shit. I'm talking about stuff of drawing down on suspects he didn't have any business doing. I'm talking about making inappropriate comments to females he encountered while on duty.
Mm.
And when he went up on my squad, and Tim, you were on the squad at the time, I was told by one of my commanders, when I'm like, this guy needs to be out of here, he's a liability walking. My commander, my captain at the time, said, well, Jeff, you know how this thing works. Usually guys like this find a way to get themselves fired. Really? You're going to wait?
We're just going to let it work itself out.
Yeah, I mean, that's fucking asinine to me.
Travis, as PTOs, we talked about this, police training officers, they would stick Travis with somebody who couldn't make it with other training officers and who were put in remediation. And Jeff, you know,
they gave me guys to quote unquote fix.
Right. Yeah, well, that's why this guy came to my squad, because when I was a training coach, I got the hard cases too. And I can't tell you, well, I'm not saying how many times, so that'd be the wrong choice of words, but I know of at least one time I had a trainee that kept fucking up and fucking, I'm talking about heinous things. And finally, I sat down with him and said, look, resign and then we'll find another job within the city for you. Maybe even with the department, but not as a sworn police officer. I was told by the training division, my chain of command, have this conversation with him if the last day of your shift, he's still not improving. I did. And it was emotional. This guy wanted it. He had the heart. He just didn't have the instinct or other capacity. And
is he sitting in this room?
No. Tim did come around a little bit. But seriously, having this conversation with this guy, it was very upsetting for me. I was telling him, you can't be a cop. So we have our 4 days off, come back for our next 4 days work. This guy's miraculously off the squad, taken to another FTO or field training officer. And 2 weeks later, he's solo. And they put me through that, having to have this conversation with him. It was ridiculous.
All right. So in the middle of this, I hate to break in, but Travis really does have to go.
Yes,
and I just want to thank him for being here. And it was a little bit of a teaser. We honestly planned on going into his whole story, but we had some technical stuff. We're trying to get used to it. So just build with us and be patient. So
what did we say, Thursday?
Yeah, I think Travis, Thursday. I think he'll be back Thursday, and then we'll get to go into your story, hopefully, as long as everything works out.
Yeah, so. I promised to be more articulate. I felt rushed today just because I'm watching the clock the whole time, but I'll be back, and it'll be certainly an interesting show.
I think it'll be one of our best.
Look forward to having you back.
Thanks, guys.
So, thank you. All right.
We're going to pause?
Mm-mm. Let's keep going. We're on a roll. So Jeff, we had our share of trainees, and I certainly had my share of trainees, good and bad. I think every training coach who's been around for a while can say the same thing. And it's one of the most frustrating things, I think, in my career, because you know some officers shouldn't be out there, just like Travis said.
Yeah, but I want to play devil's advocate here, too, in fairness. When you're in field training, especially, I mean, academy is one thing, but when you're in field training, you know, you're in a police car as a trainee, learning how to drive the car under high stress, keep up with the in-car computer, keep up with the main frequency in the car, keep up with the unit-to-unit frequency that most officers monitor on their lapel mic of their walkie-talkie. You're looking for violations of criminal and traffic law. You're trying to learn the city. And hell, I was from the city our agency was at that I worked for. It's totally different learning areas of the city as a police officer. So with all that said, I have seen the other side of the coin. I've seen some trainees that really struggled, and they were even facing possible termination just because they couldn't, you know, meet the standard. But my point is, a handful of those, it just took them a little more time. And in the end, some trainees that really struggled in field training came out to be pretty good officers, you know, down the road.
I agree with you, but there are some things like, okay, not finding a call on the map or report writing, stuff like that. You can teach. You kind of recognize as a field training coach within the first week or two what their weaknesses are, and some things you can teach, and there are some things that you just cannot teach. Like,
well, one of the things you're talking about is instinct.
Instinct is one of the main things, and gift of gab is the second. If you really don't know how to talk to a person respectfully and talk your way out of trouble, that's something you can't teach at 20 or 30 years old. And that's where I found that trainees would get into trouble, and I felt like a failure when I couldn't teach them these things at first. But then I realized, you know what, you can't teach them. Either they got it or they don't.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Every agency has them. You've got some officers that can start a damn brawl just with their mouth.
Right. Jesus, man. Did we see that? And a lot of trainees think training officers, you know, get off or think it's a great thing to get a trainee fired. I can speak for myself, and I can speak for a lot of other training officers, because a lot of us were friends. We don't like it. We don't like wasting our time, you know. We don't want to see you get fired. It's a failure on us.
Well, and again, like I gave the example I had to sit down and tell this guy one night, you're not going to be able to have the career you really long for, because the guy's heart was in the right place.
Now, did you take it personally? Like, shit, man, I really wish I could have taught this guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't see myself as a failure, but I was disappointed that I couldn't bring him around.
Right, right. Well, today's kind of a special show for us. We got a new advertiser, and, you know, we've had advertisers in the past, but this one, I think, is a really good fit. Not to say the other ones weren't, but I'm really excited about this one, and I know Jeff was too, and me and him were talking about it, and I talked about it with our producer and our writer, and we thought this was really cool. And the company name is Eastern Planning Incorporated. And I don't even know where to start, how important this is. But this company is so reputable, and we're going to get into it later. But they handle so many different things, and they've been around since 1995. They handle investment allocation, retirement planning, tax planning, estate planning, which I just went through with my mom. And if it's not on paper and not done right, it is hell. And they do insurance and risk management. And another cool thing is I received a newsletter for them now that, you know, we're working together with them. And the newsletter wasn't just about money and finance and investing. It was about fitness. It was about cool recipes. I mean, these guys really care. And you look at the bigger companies nowadays, you look at Charles Schwab, you look at all these companies, and they're like, yeah, they're big. They'll give you two sentences. They'll throw your money. Do you want aggressive? Do you want non-aggressive? Throw you in mutual funds and then say, yep, we got your money taken care of. That is not this company. This company is one-on-one, and we're going to go into it more later, but I just wanted to announce that because I am, and Jeff, I'm sure you can attest to the same thing. This is a really cool sponsor, and it really makes you think about retirement, even first responders, even if you're not first responders. And actually, next show, we're going to go into, income and first responders and how they can better handle it. So next show, we're really going to dive into this, and we're really going to talk about Eastern Planning, Inc., Incorporated, and you know, maybe give some good advice. I'd love to get one of the guys on the phone and maybe give some good advice too. So we're going to work on that. But for right now, we just got to cover one more story that to me is very important and kind of blew my mind when I read it. And Jeff can attest to this too, because we've been around it. And the headline read, "More officers died by suicide than in the line of duty in 2017. Just the headline alone. And I try not to read just the headline, but that kind of blew my mind. Jeff and I, we've been on the force. You know, Jeff's been around a lot longer on the force, but towards the end, there was an officer who ended his life that I know Jeff knew. There's another officer who I knew. He was actually my first ride-along that I did ever in Greensboro, and unfortunately, he ended his life. And that's just in our department. So they say it's 5 times more likely to suffer from anxiety and depression in the field of law enforcement. And it just blew my mind, man. Jeff, you've had your battles. I've had my battles.
Still do.
Yeah.
But I can think of 3 officers during my career that killed themselves. I don't know, man. With all the education of post-traumatic stress, you would think somehow or another agencies could find a game plan to maybe sort of profile a potential officer. I don't even know if that's possible, but it's just, how do all these guys keep slipping through the cracks?
Well, tell me if I'm overstepping my boundaries here.
Yes, you are.
I don't want to get too personal, because obviously it's family members involved. But the ones that I know of, it was mostly financial that got them into trouble. Was that the same case in the guys that you know, or is it different?
No. It was a family issue, let's say, going through a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Any suicide is a result of extreme depression, but sure, this other one, there's no financial stress or even family stress. Married, seemed to have a good, solid marriage going, and, you know, loving family and all that, and they still did it. I think one of the problems is officers, male or female, because you're seeing more and more females in the profession nowadays. So male or female, doesn't matter. You're exposed to a lot of things that most people don't see when you're a police officer. And the mentality has been for so long, and I think it's probably still, you know, the same kind of mindset of, you internalize it. You don't talk about what's bothering you. Me, I've always been told I wear my emotions on my sleeve. And that also means, another friend of mine said, man, I will never do a crime with you because you're going to tell everybody you're going to tell on yourself and take me down with you. So in other words, I've got a loud mouth and I'll keep on talking. And I'm not afraid or ashamed to talk about the pain I felt through the years and still do. Another thing that we've talked about again and again, I was big time guilty of this, self-medication. And for police officers, unless you get opioids like you did, Tim, that's going to mean alcohol, because we're subject to, random urinalysis. So
I'd like to say I passed every one of mine, by the way.
But seriously, you start self-medicating with alcohol, like a lot of cops do, and like I did myself, you know, it can send you further down that dark road. And even though it did that sometimes for me, it still helped me numb up some. Towards the end of my career, though, I was drinking way too much the last 2 or 3 years.
What scares me is the guys that you know that did commit suicide, were there any warning signs?
Not that I saw, no. Two of these guys, I was familiar with them, never really, you know, worked with them because, you know, agency our size half the force is working while the other half the force is off. And that means you're on opposite rotations. And
right.
you might not ever see these people for years. So I knew of them. But one guy in particular, he was going through a divorce. I talked to him a couple of times because I was on my first divorce at the time. And I thought he was doing well with it. I really did. It came out of nowhere. And I said, man, anytime you need to talk, you know, gave him my number. I took his. It was a complete shock.
Well, you know, being in law enforcement, and I'm going to get real personal here for a second. When I found out that my wife was leaving me, one of the first phone calls that I made was to Jeff. And Jeff, do you remember that phone call?
Oh, very well.
You know, what was the first thing I told you?
I don't know how I'm going to make it.
I don't know how I'm going to make it. And I said, get this gun out of this house.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go there unless you were.
Yep.
But, yeah, Tim called me on a Friday night last year in summertime and told me what was going on. He's like, I'm sitting here alone with my gun and I don't need it here. So I went over to get it from you. And, you know, I'll share this with you. What is biggest situations an officer can get involved in a shooting?
I'm not elaborate because I think I know the answer, but
okay. A lot of times people are sitting there with a loaded gun and they want to shoot themselves, but they don't have the onions to do it.
Okay. So, suicide by cop.
Exactly.
Right.
Not that I was a cop at the time, neither were you, but you know, you knew I was a cop for 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was very scared that night driving over that I might be met with you holding a gun wanting me to shoot back. And I've never told you that.
Yeah, you never shared that with me.
And I also didn't tell you I had a firearm in the waist of my pants that you never saw. I did.
No, I believe you.
I mean, I love you, fucker, but I'm not fucking taking one of your hot rounds without trying to return fire, you know?
No, I'd miss anyway.
But yeah, I mean, there were...
But I was let's say, you know, there's certain ways to handle things. If you find yourself in that situation, I handed Jeff the gun right away, unloaded, clipped out, showed him it was racked back. So I think I got rid of that fear pretty quick, I hope.
Oh, yeah. Once yeah. I got there, I realized that, and I wasn't thinking it was a real, that was definitely going to happen. I just was worried. Maybe this could cross your mind. But
right, and you never know, because when you reach that level of depression and anxiety, you're not yourself.
You're unpredictable as hell.
Exactly.
And the other thing, people got to understand this. One of the reasons that officers have such a high level of suicide, and this was explained to me by a sergeant 15 years ago. He was just voicing his opinion. And actually, it was about the officer that had killed himself who was going through a divorce.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I don't understand it. I just talked to him a couple of days ago. I mean, it really tore me up. And he's like, Jeff, you got to understand something. You know, death doesn't mean the same thing to cops and first responders as it does to regular society. We're desensitized to death.
Yes.
We don't see death as this creepy unknown thing to us. We have to deal with it so often we become very familiar with it and somewhat comfortable with it.
I think people think it's Hollywood sometimes where, oh yeah, there's no way officers see that many dead bodies, and that's just fucking untrue. The amount of dead bodies I saw per year is just astronomical.
Well, and it's not just the dead bodies, it's everything else that goes with it. I mean, it gets to you seeing domestic arguments day after day. That's one of our biggest calls for service. You walk in and, you know, husband and wife are, you know, wanting to kill each other. The kids are upset. You know, that shit takes its toll on you.
Well, we've seen beatings to death.
Yeah.
We've seen stabbings to death. We've seen babies beaten to death. We bring it up a lot, and cumulative PTSD.
Cumulative stress, yes.
You know,
go ahead. I'll leave.
No. Break in.
Okay. That, you're right about the cumulative stress. And we wanted to get into this article and probably, or this topic, and probably won't have time for it. But I encourage people to check out this new website I found. It was referred to me by another officer. The website is Force Science, Force Science. Did I spell that right? Fucking Force Science. ForceScience.org. Go to their website. It doesn't matter what walk you are. Fascinating shit about, you know, the trauma of using force by a cop. But it even talked about, they've got several instructional videos and articles you can read, but they did a spot on this, cumulative stress, and how cumulative stress can be far more debilitating than someone who has a catastrophic incident, you know, a critical incident occur to them, you know, one time. And it only makes sense. But when you're, what they talk about is day in and day out as a first responder, especially, you know, cops that have to use force, and what that does to you and how much different it is from someone who's just had a single exposure to a traumatic incident. I'd encourage the listeners to go to the website. Awesome stuff. And we'll be touching on some stuff on our next show from their website.
Yeah, we got about 9 minutes left. And I just want to... There's so much more to that, and we have to get into it. And it's a big part of Jeff's life, my life, Travis's life. I mean, pretty much any first responder. And I don't want to, we say first responder, but Jesus, firefighters got to go through the same thing. And
EMTs.
I know that covers EMTs. You know, we're not leaving you guys out on purpose. When we say first responder, we use that term because we want to include you guys.
Ah, shit, man. It's the fucking firemen and the EMTs that are trying to cut people out of a car at a major accident scene. We're just directing traffic.
Yeah.
I mean, we might have to try to... Shit, man, half the time we got an accident with injury, by the time we got on scene, fire was usually already there.
Except those goddamn firefighters pull their truck out and block all traffic and fuck it up for all of us. No, I'm just kidding. I have great respect for firefighters
yeah,
and EMTs.
But again, what we would have to do on most accidents, things like that, if we did beat the fire department EMTs there, it was short-lived. They were right there behind us usually.
Yeah. If you were me, you're like, okay, I just got to buy time until they get here.
Oh, yeah. Keep talking, buddy.
They'll be here shortly. They'll be here. Someone who can save you.
Blood? But seriously, they're the ones that are talking to the patients. You know, they're trying to calm them, trying to get them out of a car that's mangled or, you know, hell, even someone that's been shot.
Yeah,
you know, we might have to. Usually, we would get there first.
Well, we're in a bigger city, and not always the case.
Let me back that up.
Yeah,
shootings were different. That's when we would usually say, or if we didn't say it, the fire or EMTs would say we would be staging because it's a hot call.
Right.
You know, so we'd have to get in first, but they were usually, you know, chomping at the bit to come rolling in. But they're the ones that are, you know, doing CPR, you know, plugging holes, you know, trying to keep these people alive and have them check out on them. Yeah.
No, we use a certain code. I'm not going to give away because that hides things. But our first job in a case like a shooting or a stabbing was like, all right, secure the area. We'll give a code saying, all right, fire, EMS, come in here. We fucking need you right now. And to save this person's life. That was like kind of our first goal, I think, when we arrived on a scene like that. Just like, and the reason I bring this up is because there's this riff out there that fire hate police, police hate fire. Hate's a strong word, but we really are on the same team and we know that. But it's fun to play along with.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I'll
tell you this. I played 2 years for our flag football game against the fire department.
Oh, God.
First game, we had one fireman go to the hospital with a broken orbit and concussion. And this is flag. Of course, if you had a bunch of middle-aged guys trying to relive high school and college years.
You know, that reminds me. There's a police and fire hockey game coming up. I got to get the exact dates for you. And it's for a fireman whose child has cancer and really needs some help. And I'm going to get the information for you guys. It's on my Facebook page if you go to Timothy J. Block and you're friends with me. But I'm going to elaborate on that on this show. Couldn't be a better cause. These guys, this firefighter needs our help. And imagine you had a kid who had cancer and the funds were small and you needed these funds to save your child.
You know, but I want to interject something here real quick. I hope I'm not stepping on your toes.
You always do, but I'm good with it.
But seriously, that's what's really amazing to me. Even with good insurance, families go in debt for the rest of their lives when there's a major illness. Why the fuck do we have insurance?
People think that police, first responders have great insurance. And it's not true. It's really not. We don't get everything covered. Jeff, when we got a raise, it was like, okay, you're getting a raise, 2% raise. And then our health insurance would go up 5%. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
we lost money.
Yeah, we didn't have the highest level of insurance, but it was pretty good. But there are people...
But you say pretty good?
But
it should be top-notch, don't you think?
Of course I think that. But my point is, most people walk around with less coverage than what we had.
Right.
That's my point.
Okay, fair
and,
enough.
You know, but there are a couple of families in the police community that... Throughout my career, that they struggled financially because of some major illness of a loved one, a family member.
And it shouldn't be, man.
No, what the hell are we paying for?
It shouldn't be. Okay, you got low salary, but at least hook us up with some good fucking health insurance. You know what I mean? We got to close with this, and I promised, and we got a couple minutes left. Last podcast, we covered a question and answer, and we have a shitload of them, but it said, should officers lose their job because of DWI? And then the person listened to the show. That person was very appreciative of what we said, but he elaborated. He said, you know what? I asked the question. I worded it wrong, but I love the answer you guys gave. But his thing was, should officers lose their job before due process carries out? Meaning?
Conviction in court.
Conviction in court. If the officer is found not guilty, should he still lose his job? That spun it for me, man. That's a hard one.
Well,
I don't know if I can give quite an answer to that.
Well, you know, just like we talked about last podcast when we addressed this question, you know, we talked about, you know, totality of circumstances and an individual, you know, case-by-case basis. But the thing about this one is, well, there's a shitload about it. But the first thing is, if you are charged with DWI, you're probably talking about you've already violated directives or SOPs with some agencies. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure how our directives completely read on that, but they did touch on it, correct, Tim?
Yes.
Basically, they're saying you can't drink and drive when you're impaired, per our directive SOP. But here, even if you want to say, okay, we're going to keep you on until we get a conviction in court, the way these things are continued, DWI cases, it's not uncommon for these things to be continued and not resolved 10 years down the road. So, what are you going to do with that officer for the duration of time until there is a verdict in a courtroom?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the lawyer and the defendant maybe, you know, trying to extend the timeline. And you know what? If they can't solve it, I don't know the timeline, but if they can't solve it 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, then maybe it's time to lose their job. So, in other words...
Okay, but I got to stop you there. So, you're saying, McCall, the legal process could take too long. You should find a cap somewhere for time.
Yes.
And, okay, well then, that's not fair to the officer even then. I mean, is it his fault that these courts are... take so fucking long? No, it's not his fault.
Well, I think it's the lawyer of the defendant trying to extend it. And hopefully the officer gets fired. Hopefully he retires. Hopefully he forgets about the details.
Okay, okay. So maybe I'm getting what you're saying. Maybe the defense attorney for the said officer has to understand, you know, this isn't a normal proceeding.
Right.
You know, I'm on a timeline here.
Yep.
The first time this thing is up for trial, we've got to go then and there.
Yeah, because you and I know attorneys play tricks like hell.
Oh yeah,
to extend it.
But here's the other side of the coin with you saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you weren't convicted of DWI doesn't mean you weren't drunk as hell when you're driving.
Right. True. Yeah.
I mean,
true. But due process is, I don't know. Due process is built on the American law, and you know, if you're found not guilty of drunk driving. And there are a lot of circumstances that come into play with that. Do you deserve to lose your job if you're found not guilty?
I guess we're going to be as clear on this as the original question.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can't say a yes or no. Should you lose your job if you're found not guilty? I don't think that I can give a yes or no on that. I think it, again, has to go by individual case-by-case basis and the circumstances thereof. And I think that's what we're seeing, you know, in a lot of, I don't know, entities. You know, when you have absolutes, you know, you sort of paint yourself in a corner sometimes. The other thing is, I've said this expression before on the show, there is letter of the law and spirit of the law. You know, letter of the law says, okay, you're charged with DWI, just charged, not even convicted, but the day you're charged, you lose your job. That's letter of law. Spirit of law says, okay, you know, was there an accident involved? You know, what kind of officer was this? You know, like we said, all these things we mentioned last show.
Totality.
Right, the totality. So the one definite answer I can give the listener who wrote this question to us, posed this question to us is, I would only thing I can say with absolute clarity is I would like to see it case-by-case basis. I can't give you a definite yes or no. Tim, I think you're, you know, really trying to see this from every angle. And again, as opposed to doing what you're doing, I just say leave it a case-by-case basis.
Right. Okay. Leaving it as a case-by-case basis. We do it for every civilian, right? I think a cop deserves the same.
Provided there's no injury or crash with
right. And I think, you know, you and I have seen officers who have unfortunately been charged with DWI, came back to the force, and others who didn't. And again, totality of the circumstances. God, I really can't make up my mind on this.
Well, and I'll be honest. There were several occasions I would have blown over the legal limit when I was off duty driving my personal car.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I'm proud of. And when I say that, I'm not saying it like most people would say that phrase sometimes. I'm saying it because I saw firsthand the disastrous results of drinking and driving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how in the fuck could I, you know, take that kind of chance? I'm not talking about my career. I'm talking about putting the public at risk. Now, I'm not saying I was pied, shit-faced drunk, but there were times when I was driving, I really shouldn't have been driving, not just because of legal impairment, but because I was not in the control of that vehicle that I should have had.
Well, the show is about truthfulness, and Jeff, you know a story about mine, and next show, I'll reveal it, and it shows, you know, what can happen if you drive drunk. I'm not saying I killed somebody. I'm not saying I did anything illegal. But what I'm saying is, you know, it does play a factor in certain things. So I think we can leave it at that. I know we didn't give you a definitive answer. And that's on purpose because I don't think there is a definitive answer. And that's nationwide. We're not just talking about local. So I think we'll leave it at that for now, Jeff. Are you okay with that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And the person who wrote in, we have so many other people who wrote in answering questions, but this was a serious one. And it hit close to home because of a couple reasons, which some I can give away and some I can't, just because of civil law and respect as well. So with that said, please do us a favor. Eastern Planning Incorporated, this is informal. This isn't a formal advertisement. I'm just saying Eastern Planning Inc., please look them up and check out what they're all about, okay? And Eastern Planning Inc. is one of our advertisers. Of course, it's no secret. They are going to pay us for their airtime, but we don't care about that right now. I believe in their business plan and business format.
Well,
to the point where,
hey, it's just like the book. We turned down what could have been decent money to see these because of our principles and our values, and we wouldn't pick up a sponsor that we didn't have belief in what their message and their idea and intent is when it comes to something like this.
Exactly what Jeff said. If I didn't believe in them and Jeff didn't believe in them, we wouldn't be pushing them. So I hope you look at Eastern Planning Inc. And check them out. With that said, I don't think we have much else to cover this episode. So, Jeff, do you have anything else?
No, I'm good, man.
Okay, man. And thanks for Travis for coming in and helping us out. And thanks to Jill. Jill's had to take a little bit of time off right now. And we miss her, but we know she'll be back very soon. And please, policingblackandwhite.wordpress.com. Use our contact page. Give us some good ideas. Our book is available Amazon.com. You can even use Prime. You can receive the book within days. And use our Player FM through Google Format. Use iTunes. I don't care how you listen to us. Just listen to us.
Just for clarification, the name of the book is Policing in Black and White. A little bit different from the...
What did I say?
Policing Black and White. Well, it's
confusing. We don't cover the same things we do on air as we do in the book. And besides that, I think we covered everything. Look forward to Travis's rest of the story, which will, I don't know, surprise you. And I think that's it. Peace within and peace out.
Good night, everybody.